Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Hour number two, 5 o'clock. It starts off, as always, with Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
We got two top stories today. We have Josh Harris's press conference, and we have just a monster weekend in the NBA when it comes to transactions and trades. And, well, there are a few people I'd like to talk about either story with other than David Aldridge, and he can talk about both. So, lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, the Hall of Famer, David Aldridge, is with us. DA, happy Monday. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. Let's start local first, and then we can get to the Holy S trade, as you framed it, which, with you going Holy S, that's a big trade with the Lakers and Luka Doncic. But the big story, the big news item, of course, that comes out of Josh Harris's press conference today is that he says the name Commanders is here to stay. There might be tweaks to other parts of the branding, but the name is here to stay. What was your reaction when you heard that at this point in the timeline and what that means for the franchise?
I mean, I wasn't surprised. They've been very consistent about it over the last year and a half. Really, since Josh Harris bought the team, he's been fairly consistent that he had no interest in changing the name. He wasn't going to really think seriously about changing the name. What he would say in the past is, my priority is getting the stadium deal done, and I think that's still his priority. But, you know, he was fairly demonstrative and declarative today that he's not changing the name. And I don't know, Craig. I may be in my own bubble, but I still just don't believe that this is something that takes up the bandwidth of, you know, a sizable majority of fans of this team. I mean, I think they are much more interested in who's going to be the left tackle next year. You know what I mean? Like, this team is going places now, and I just don't think the name of the team really matters to that many people. I'm not saying it doesn't matter to anyone. I know there is a group of people for whom it matters very much. But at some point, we have to move on from this. The name's been changed. It's not a great name, but they're not going to change it back and make all of those Jaden Daniels jerseys they just sold worthless, essentially, you know, to some other name now. The name is the name, and either you want to root for this team or you don't because of the name. And if you don't want to root for the team because they're called the Commanders, okay, that's your call. I can't do anything about that. But I think you're going to be missing out on something pretty good the next few years.
Yeah, I totally agree. And for that reason, I'm glad that it's over. Like, I'm glad that they were definitive in a way that they haven't been in the past. And I thought it was interesting also when Josh, you know, said, like, well, it means something to people in the building. You think about when Adam Peters talks about, oh, what is a Commander? Like, that now means something, where for a long time it didn't mean anything other than the stupid name that Dan Snyder picked. Was there anything else from that press conference that stood out to you, David? Obviously, the other most newsworthy thing is the stadium, although he was pretty coy about that. Was there anything else from Josh Harris today that stood out to you?
No, I had actually talked to him a week ago. Well, the week of the championship game, I was able to get him, and we covered most of that ground in that conversation. So none of it was especially new to me. You know, I think it is instructive that while he's saying Maryland is still in the game, he is not hiding his preference for the RFK site. I think it's fair to say. I think it's clear that that's the site he wants to do the deal on. But, you know, as he mentioned, you know, the city has to agree to that. And while he kind of ducked the question about whether he would pay for the stadium himself or ask for the city to help him, I mean, I just think it's going to be difficult to get a whole lot of money commitment from the city. They just gave Ted Leonsis $500 million to fix or to renovate Capital One Arena, which they absolutely should have done, in my opinion, because, you know, while I understand how important the Commanders are to the city, an NFL stadium is not open 200-plus nights a year like Capital One Arena is. That is a major economic engine for the city, for people that work there and people that live in the surrounding areas and restaurants and all of those things that are open 200-plus, 300 nights a year because there's a game or there's a concert or there's an event. There's something going on at Capital One Arena that 15 to 20,000 people are attending. And you just can't – that does not happen with a football stadium. Yes, I know they can have the occasional concert there, and it would be great to have Beyonce there, and it would be great to have a Final Four there, but that's still not – you don't get close to 100 nights a year with a football stadium. So even the most used football stadiums are not open 100 nights a year, you know. So, and that's still less than half of what Capital One is. So just making a decision as a city – you're going to opt for the one that's open more. So I think that that, it to me, is the crux of the matter. How much public funding does Josh Harris want, and how much public funding can he get from Washington or Maryland? I think Virginia's out. I don't get any sense that they're talking to or interested in Virginia as a realistic option at this point.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And I will say, David, good day in the Hoffman household when those Beyonce tour dates came out in Washington, D.C. She's not going many places with Cowboy Carter. And Washington, D.C. is one of them for two nights in July. So that's fun. It's also going to put a very exciting dent in my bank account when those tickets hit. But yeah, hey. It's worth it. We all saw her on Netflix. Imagine what that's going to be live. Anyway, David Aldridge with us here on the Hoffman Show. All right, so to the NBA, David, and this trade between the Lakers and the Mavericks. And the general consensus seems to be, what the hell are the Mavericks doing, for a litany of reasons? So I'm going to ask you this. Is there any way that what Nico Harrison, the general manager of the Mavericks, did and the way he went about all of this actually works out in a way that a year from now, 2 years from now, we're like, man, all of us were wrong. He was right.
Well, if they win a championship, sure. I mean, that's the only thing that would justify a trade is if you win the whole thing, right? They were in the finals last year. So if the Mavericks make the finals and win, whether they, you know, doesn't matter who they play or beat, and win the championship, then you can say we made the deal that helped us win a championship. Anything short of that, it's a failure. It's a colossal failure. Because you were already in the finals with Luka Doncic, who, whether or not takes care of himself or is in great shape, well, if he was out of shape, the out of shape guy got you to the finals. You know what I mean?
Right.
And is still one of the five best players in the league. So, I mean, the only thing that justifies the deal is winning an NBA championship, because you were already in the finals with him. The only thing you didn't do was finish it and win two more games. So, I think that's it. And that's what makes it a really perilous deal, because there's no, well, we won 57 games and we made the second round. No, we already did that with Luka. You know, you already made conference finals with Luka. You made the NBA finals with Luka. So you got to do better than that to make this deal make any sense.
Well, and then even then, there is the question of, could you have won multiple with Luka, because he is that good in the windows and the age frame?
I can't deal in hypotheticals. I can only deal in what I did, what's accomplished. And if they do win a ring, or they do win a title this year or next year, you know, then you can say it was justified because we won. But if you don't, if you just get to the same level and you don't win, then that, to your point, would be like, well, you could do that. You could have done this with a much younger guy and had the same result. You only do this to achieve a different result. And that's the box they put themselves in by making this deal.
So what was the most surprising element of this to you? There's so many options here, from, like, for the first time in his entire career, LeBron was completely unaware of something that was happening with his team, to the fact that apparently Danny Ainge, who was involved in the deal as one of the executives of the Utah Jazz, the third team in this deal, apparently did not know until 30 minutes prior that the deal that he was helping consummate involved Luka Doncic and Anthony Davis. There is the general secrecy of this. There is the return that the Mavericks get. Like, what is the most surprising element of this deal to you?
I mean, I think it is I don't know. You don't know what's going on in that room, in that team. Like, whatever the rationale is, they decided they'd rather not be in the Luka Doncic business anymore. And okay, that's your call. But once you do that, you have to maximize the return. You have to maximize, because he's one of the five best players in the league. If you don't ask for the moon and the stars for him, what are you going to ask the moon and the stars for? You know what I mean? So you can ask any team in the league for their best player for Luka Doncic. You can go to the Bucks and say, we want Giannis for Luka Doncic. And it's a fair ask. It's not an unfair ask. You can go to Denver and say, we want Jokic for Luka Doncic. It's not an unfair ask. Now, they may say no, but you're not wrong for asking, because he's one of the five best players in the league. So you're not, so the fact that they didn't even ask anybody, they don't know what they could have gotten for him. Even if you want Anthony Davis, you still could do a deal where you get draft picks from one team and you get Anthony Davis from the Lakers. And you will still end up with Anthony Davis. But now you got Anthony Davis and a whole bunch of picks. Why wouldn't you want that? So the fact that they, I know some people have said, well, you don't want Luka to be mad. Look, he's going to be mad when he finds out you're trying to trade him. Period. End of sentence. So, wouldn't you rather him be mad and get more out of that than him not knowing? And now he's mad at you for trading him and you got way less than you could have gotten? I'll live with him being mad at me. That's life in the big city. You make a decision like that, you got to live with the consequences.
Right. It just seems so inexplicable. This is a fun question, and perhaps you have gotten some texts from other GMs or executives or whatever. I'm sure that there's plenty of them that would have loved to be in the Luka Doncic market. What if he goes to market, if you will? What is the return? Anthony Davis and a first round pick. It's not a bad return in most situations. Feels like an underpay for Luka Doncic. What do you think, that knowing that how many first round picks got traded for guys like Paul George and Kevin Durant and all these others through the years? What's the Luka Doncic return if they had taken this thing to market?
The Knicks just gave the Nets five first round picks, control of five first round picks for Mikal Bridges, who is a really good player. He's a really good player. He's not as good as Luka Doncic. You know what I mean? He just isn't. The Jazz got five players and five picks for Minnesota for Rudy Gobert, who is a great defensive player. He's great. And he got crossed over by Luka Doncic in the conference final for a dagger three to win a game in the conference finals last year. He's a terrific defensive player. He's a four-time defensive player of the year?
Yep.
And he got pantsed by Luka Doncic in the playoffs. So what are we talking about? That's my point. Whatever you ask for him is reasonable. It's not unreasonable. And so that you wouldn't ask for – that you would only focus on one team. And even with that team, you only got one of their two first-round picks that they have available. I don't care if they think Luka's going to walk. They're the ones getting Luka. That's their problem. That's not my problem. You know what I mean? So if I'm offering you Luka Doncic, I want both of those picks, and I want some players. I want more players, And so, because you're getting the best player in the deal, I'm taking less than what I already have. So you have to make that worth my while, not the other way around. So that's what it's just crazy to me that they wouldn't do that. And figure out a way to engage Brooklyn or OKC or one of these teams or Utah that's sitting on 100 draft picks over the next 5 years. I need some of those picks. I got to rebuild my team in 3 years. So I need future first-round picks for Luka Doncic. And they didn't get – they got one, which just is way not enough.
Right, and they got the one that's closer to now, which seems like a bad idea when Luka Doncic is about to turn 26 years old. At least give me the one where he's 33, not 31.
Right,
I don't get that either.
It's weird.
Weird's one way to put it. David Aldridge –
The weirdest thing is that the ownership, it's not that the basketball people did it. The owner said, yeah, do that. Okay, go ahead and do that. Well, why would you do that?
Do we think that the owner is actually... I mean, this is another part of the story, right? David is David Aldridge with this, of course, senior columnist for The Athletic here on The Hoffman Show. Like, I don't know that that people that aren't as locked into the NBA realize Mark Cuban's not the owner in Dallas anymore. He sold the team a couple years ago.
Sole controlling interest, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's still a minority partner, but he's not involved here. This is someone else who is the governor now of the team.
Yep.
And not all the owners are super locked in. Like, how reflective is this of the new ownership in Dallas that may not be paying attention that their basketball person came to them and said, this is the deal, and they just went, sure, okay, trade Luka Doncic for that?
I don't think I'm breaking any news to say that Miriam Adelson is not paying attention to the NBA on a daily basis. Pretty sure she's not. So the only thing that I can surmise, and it's not based on any intel, is that when they talked about this deal, the idea of, all right, if we keep Luka Doncic, we have to give him a supermax contract next year to make sure that he doesn't bolt and go anywhere else. We have to give him a supermax deal for $345 million. We have to pay him $70 million a year, basically, for 5 years to keep him going forward. And at that point, I could see an owner, I could see Miriam Adelson and the family going, we don't want to pay that much money for anybody. And even if you say, but he's one of the five best players in the league, you can philosophically say, I'm just not going to pay a basketball player, however good they are, $70 million a year. I just do not think that any one player is worth that. That's a choice. And it's okay. They own the team, Craig. They can decide whatever they want about who they're going to pay. But I think you should come out and say that. This is what I always say about owners. You can decide whatever you want, but you have to come out and explain to the people that you are asking to pay for season tickets and for parking and for food and for booze why you're doing that, why Luka Doncic is no longer in this building. You have to explain it to them. If that is your call, and live with the consequences of that. And that's where I have problems with ownership in pro sports, because they hide. They make decisions and they don't come out and say, this is why I'm doing it. And you can hate me if you want, but that's why I'm doing it. And that's the only thing that even begins to make sense with me to me about this trade. Like, whatever, unless you have catastrophic medical information about Luka Doncic, like his knee is about to turn to putty and he can't play more than another year or two. Like, if you have that, like, okay, you should tell the other team that, but if you that's your call. But I don't think that's it. So I'm guessing, and that the supermax is the only thing that makes sense. It's the only rationale that makes any sense at all, that they just didn't want to pay that. They just thought that's not something that we want to do, even for Luka Doncic.
Right. And at which point, like, why own a basketball team? Like, the whole point is to get a guy like Luka Doncic, which part of the deal is you have to pay him that much money.
You got to pay him. Got to pay him. This is baseball people drive me crazy with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great player. He's a great player. He's a great player. Yeah, okay, now I'm a free agent. Pay me what they're worth. I can't pay you that much. I'll destroy the balance of my team. Like, it's crazy. Like, when do I get paid what I'm worth in baseball? Like, I'm a great player. Pay me what I'm worth.
Right.
And that never happens in baseball.
And in basketball, you don't have to deal with it because they have the supermax. They artificially limit the value of the players. Meanwhile, on the other side of this trade, the last thing for you, DA, is David Aldridge is with us from The Athletic, of course, here on The Hoffman Show. The Lakers side of this, How does this play out on two fronts? One, like, what's the actual basketball implication here for the Lakers, assuming that Luka gets this calf injury figured out and heal LeBron, get some time under their belts, and they get to go into the playoffs with Luka Doncic and LeBron James on the same basketball team? And then what does this mean for LeBron's relationship with the Lakers moving forward, where he's got some contract stuff that he's got to figure out, and he's LeBron freaking James and was not told about this deal ahead of time before one of his best friends and someone who shares an agent, by the way, the agency I can't say he owns it because he doesn't, but his best friend does, that gets traded here?
I don't think, that part of it, I don't think matters at all. Like, it's not like it traded them, I'm not going to say the Wizards. That's a low blow. It's not like it traded them to Charlotte. Well, you know what I mean? Like, they traded him to a really good team. He has a chance to win a championship. He'll be fine. So you know, and I look, the Lakers deal in superstars in decades. They don't deal in year to year. They don't particularly care about this year. I mean, they're going to, they have to make trades to try and be competitive. But the point is, they now have a future. They now have a path forward with a 25-year-old superstar to build around. And so, you know, LeBron is on a year-to-year thing. He decides whether he wants to play another year, and then he tells everybody. So he can, you know, LeBron's MO has been to continue to ask, and rightly so, by the way, for the absolute maximum amount, because he's worth it. He's been worth it for 20 years. He's LeBron James. Now, he could take less, you know, if he wants to help in roster building and stuff like that. I mean, he could take less. So we'll see what he does with that. I'm not worried about this year. They're two great players. Great players figure out how to play with each other if they care at all about winning. And they'll figure out a way for them to maximize both of their skill sets. They don't have enough left. They don't have enough around them to make a real run this year, I don't think, as good as they both still are. But that's not, they're not worried about this year. They're worried about the next 6 or 7 years. That they'll have an opportunity to really put a championship-level team around a great, dynamic young player. Now, Luka's not for everybody because he pounds the ball. Pounds it. So everybody don't want to play with him and stand in the corner and wait. But there's enough good players that would be willing to do it because he's that good and he does pass the ball. He's not selfish. They can put enough players. It will take them a couple of years, but in 2027 or so, they should be pretty good. I would think they'd be pretty good with Luka being the focal point of that franchise going forward.
Knowing LeBron like you do and having watched him work for 20 years, do you think that this has a significant impact on Luka's career, getting to watch LeBron go about his business every day? Let's say it's even for the rest of this year. Let's say LeBron after this year is like, I'm going to go play somewhere else because I don't feel like doing this and the Lakers are annoying me, or whatever he wants to do. He wants to go back to Cleveland one more time, whatever he wants to do. Does the months that Luka gets to spend with LeBron, watching him work the way that he does, like, materially change the trajectory potentially of his career if some of the conditioning concerns or whatever are potentially true?
You'd like to think that somebody would see the example of, you know, one of the two or three greatest players in the history of basketball and see what LeBron does in terms of keeping his body right and being on top of his, you know, physical conditioning, you know, to an incredible degree. And go, well, maybe I should start doing some of that. Like, you don't have to do everything LeBron does. You don't have to mimic him. But you can at least go, okay, I need to, you know, I'm 7 years in the league. I need to start being more conscientious about my body, right? And how I get ready for a season and how I get through a season and all of those things. So you'd like to think that a smart guy would look at that and go, I should start doing that. I should start emulating that. I should start being more serious about this. But that doesn't mean he will, right? Doesn't mean he will. He could say, I just got to the finals in the body that I'm in, right? You know? And so, I'd like to think he would, but no guarantees. You know, LeBron's not for everybody. Right? Like, you know, everybody's not for everybody. Like, there's people that aren't going to be as maniacal as LeBron is about staying in shape. Not going to be as crazy as Steph Curry is about staying in shape. You know, that's why they're the players that they are, because they are maniacal. That's why Brady played till he was 45, because he was insane about his body. But that's not for everybody, including great players, including Hall of Fame players. It's not for everybody. You know, you'd like to think they would do it, but that doesn't mean they will.
I guess we'll find out. David Aldridge, senior columnist at The Athletic. You can read his coverage not only of everything going on in the NBA, but everything going on in DC sports there. DA, always appreciate your time here on the show, and I'm sure I'll see you down the road.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
That's David Aldridge with us, the Hall of Famer, here on The Hoffman Show. Man, it was funny, Anthony, listening. The Athletic did an emergency podcast, their NBA Daily podcast, and they were just like, when David Aldridge says, I don't get surprised by anything, but this was a holy S moment, that's when you know, like, a trade has gone to the next level. And speaking of like the notoriety of this trade, do you watch the Grammys last night?
I did indeed.
Trevor Noah and Jim Gaffigan made a Luka Doncic trade joke in the Grammys. In the Grammys! That's how big of a cultural moment this trade was. So, talk about a massive, massive deal. The NFL could have a massive, massive deal coming as well. Myles Garrett has requested out in Cleveland. We will talk about that later this hour, but I want to talk about the Luka trade. So, Anthony and I will chop it up about that. Give our own two cents next here on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. So this weekend, I go to bed Saturday night, I believe it was. Saturday night, wake up Sunday morning, and I have what seems to be a patently absurd text thread that is greeting me. Because at like 11-something the night before, my friend Alex had texted the group thread that is me, Orioles announcer Kevin Brown, and himself. The three of us go way back to Syracuse Dates. I've mentioned this group chat on the air before. And it's the original Shams tweet that says Anthony Davis has been traded to the Mavericks for Luka Doncic. More specifically, Luka Doncic has been traded to the Lakers for Anthony Davis. And then Kevin, I presume after he gets done calling some college basketball game somewhere at 2 in the morning, responded saying he had to be hacked, right? And then I wake up at 7:30 on Sunday morning because I can't sleep in. And I just go, I'm sorry, what happened? And that's how I found out about the trade. Anthony, how did you find out about the trade that shook up your favorite team?
So I was actually with Zaire.
That's right, because you were at the Pro Bowl games this weekend.
Yeah. I was with him, a couple of other, you know, football players. And
I'm going to be invasive. Were you with known NBA superfan Bobby Wagner at the time?
I was. So that happens, and Zaire's like, bro, why are you on your phone? Bro, I'm like, bro, there was a nuke that just exploded, bro. You don't know anything about it. Like, that's why. And then literally, like, Bobby's tapping him on the shoulder. And, like, everybody else is like, yo, what? And then the DJ announces that Luka had been traded for AD. And everybody's like, what? It was crazy. Like, everybody was just so confused.
Some of the videos that are out there are amazing. Brad Beal and Kevin Durant finding out on the Minnesota bench. I think there was the Jazz players that found out. I think that was one video that was going around. I saw some video from, like, a party in Dallas, and it's just, like, a bunch of rich white kids, like, hanging out at a pool, and everyone just is going, no! Like, distraught at this party in Dallas. Like, it was, I had a buddy of mine, because I used to, you know, obviously live and work down there, which I'll get into in a second, like, why this trade is so shocking. There's so many reasons. But, like, I had buddies texting me being like, this is insane. My buddy Jared Sandler, who helps call the Rangers games on radio down there and is just an enormous Mavs fan. Jared's wife got him cupcakes on Sunday that said, I'm sorry about Luka, because he was so distraught. Like, I don't know that there's an athlete currently in the DMV that would have the reaction that they had outside of if the Commanders traded Jaden Daniels. Like, truly, that is the only parallel I can pot. Like, even someone like Terry. Like, Terry's now 30, whatever. Like, I would be distraught if they traded Terry. That would be an insane thing to do. But if they got someone, I don't know. It's such a hard one because Terry is 30, right? Like, Luka's 25, turns 26. Jaden, I mean, hilariously, he's not that much older than Jaden Daniels. Like, truly, the analogy works in part because Jaden will turn 25 sometime in the next 12 months, I believe. I believe Jaden's 24 currently. So, like, we are talking about a young superstar, like the kind of superstar that you spend your entire life trying to get. And the Mavs were lucky enough to luck into two in a row. They had Dirk for the better part of a decade, and Dirk was kind of, you know, flirting with that line. Obviously, was an MVP back in 2006 and 2011. They win the championship. And then on the downside of Dirk's career, Luka comes in and they're able to pull off that trade with Atlanta to trade up to get him in the draft because they realize that he's that special. And they freaking trade that guy away. And I think it's especially jarring for so many reasons. And before you even get into some of the details of how it went down, but you just have to start with the fact that the Dallas Mavericks lost in the NBA Finals last year to the Boston Celtics, right? Think of who the Boston Celtics are right now. Who are they built around?
Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
Specifically Tatum, though, right? Yeah. Like, Brown's incredible. And if Dallas had a Jaylen Brown piece, maybe this is a different conversation. But mainly Jason Tatum. And there have been stories for years about do they need to break up Tatum and Brown? Do they need to trade Jason Tatum? Do they need to trade Jaylen Brown? Like, what do you do? And the Celtics just said, we are not going to get better by trading these two guys. We are going to continue to chip away around them until we find the right pieces to win a championship. Because we've done the hard part. We got specifically Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown is awesome. I'm not trying to take away from Jaylen. But Jaylen's not a top five player in the league. Jaylen's a top 15 player in the league, probably. Maybe top 20. But certainly he's like the best number two in the league. Right? So if you've got the thing that's hard, the Wizards are the Wizards right now because they are as far away from possible as having that guy. Like, I don't say that to be mean. I say that to say, like, part of the reason that the Wizards are in the situation they are is they didn't even manage their assets right of not having that guy. Like, the closest they had to it was Brad, and they should have traded him for a better chance to get someone like a Luka and take a flyer on a younger player like that and hope that it panned out better than he had panned out once it was clear that, like, Brad was not going to turn into a top five player in the league, and they didn't do that. And instead, they wound up giving him the no-trade clause and blah, 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 and, like, that's how the Wizards are the Wizards. We talked about that on Friday. So the Wizards now are going all in on the only route they have to getting one of those guys, which is the draft. And so the Mavericks had one. And Anthony Davis might have been one at one point in his career, and at his absolute peak probably still is one, but he's not consistent enough to be considered one. It's not just how good is your good, it's how consistently are you that. And they traded away the 25-year-old top five player, which is literally the hardest thing to get in the sport. And they did it because they lost in the finals to a team who decided to not do that when a lot of people were pushing them to, because they realized that was a stupid thing to do, and they had done the hard part, and they needed to do the other parts around. That doesn't make any sense. And by the way, this is the franchise that went through this same thing with Dirk in the mid-2000s and did not give up on Dirk because they knew that the hardest thing to do would be replace Dirk. And so they kept building around him, around him, around him, around him, until they finally won the championship. They probably should have done some stuff after that instead of trying to run it back. But it's hard to fault them for trying to run it back when they won the championship and then re-signing Tyson Chandler and doing all the things the Mavs did, which was a discussion forever when I worked down there because it was a lot closer to when that had happened. But they kept chasing it because they're like, we have Dirk. We must maximize Dirk. And instead of being like, how do we fit in more pieces one at a time around Luka to win a championship? They're like, let's punt on that and try something else. That is asinine behavior.
Yeah, I mean, how much of the off-the-court drama sort of kind of do you think, like, went into it? Just because, like, you know, always reports Luka's out of shape, not conditioning, things of that. Aside from that, I don't really care about that because when he's on the court, he's super productive. They're going out there scoring. And again, they were just in the finals
last year. To me, that says something about your organization. If you can't get a guy to get in the gym and get in shape and find a way to coach him and connect with him, then you have the wrong coach, the wrong GM, the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, yes, your scouting and who the player is matters. And if that is a legitimate problem with Luka, like, that's something Luka needs to work on. But I have a hard time believing that because Luka's been relatively durable until this season, and he just got you to the finals last year. And if you've killed his passion for the game to a point that he's not doing the things he needs to do, that is reflective of you as an organization. Whatever Jason Kidd is doing, and there's been other people that have clashed with Jason Kidd throughout his life and career for sure, And Nico Harrison seems to be a very interesting character. This is the same guy who, when he was a Nike executive, by the way, headed up the crew that botched the Steph Curry presentation that led to Steph signing with Under Armour. So great history that Nico Harrison has. Like, it's wild. And then you get into the fact that they're like, well, defense wins championships. And it's like, okay, that's what you're going to take out of this. And by the way, well, here's why that one falls short. Same dude, same organization, same front office that traded for Kyrie Irving 2 years ago. Now you decided defense wins championships and that Luka's the problem in that front? Like, it's why it every stone, and then not maximizing the value, like the secretive nature of it. At no point did the process reflect good organization. And I think that's the thing that just like irks me when you have someone like Luka who's so special as a player and it was so beloved in the community. You built everything on your team around him. And to betray your fans like that with process that's this bad. And if you sincerely think like we can't win with this dude, his head is not on straight, whatever, then you owe it to your fans to come out, say that, and to say, we don't think we can win with him, but we did. We tried everything we could, and then we ultimately sold him at the highest possible value. And they didn't even do that. Bad deal, bad process, bad everything, incredibly stupid, which is why they're getting crushed, and they should. And yet still, they do have Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving. If those dudes get hot for 6 weeks in May and June, then could they win a championship? I guess they could, because those dudes are that good. But I don't know that those dudes are that good anymore. Kyrie in the finals last year was pretty brutal. So, TBD. Going to be an interesting couple of weeks. We haven't even talked about the Lakers side. Maybe we'll get to that tomorrow. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Dave Johnson joins us live next.
Right corner, Kispert open for three. It's there.
Time to get the radio party started.
Feeds now the right block of Al-Sar, slam.
It's time for Dave Johnson on a Wizards game day.
Blocked by Colabali. Left wing George. 3 o'clock for three. It's there. Feel like busting loose. Busting loose. Crossover step back.
On the Hoffman Show.
It's the Hoffman Show. We are on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Dave Johnson with us. Dave, it seems like 16 is a magic number. I don't think that any Wizards fan wants to see 16 anymore, but what is it about these 16-game losing streaks where, hey, that 17th game, you better bet on the Wizards. Big win over the weekend to get that done.
Well, no, indeed. And you know what? Although I was talking to somebody about that. I mean, let's say we lost 17. I mean, at the end of the day, the validation of what this team is doing is that Alex Sarr, Bilal Coulibaly, Bob Carrington are in the Rising Stars game. If this team was losing and you couldn't point to players that are developing, didn't that be a problem? But also, yes, this team every night does want to win. I know that now the Arcana would be like, what is Dave drinking? They just lost 16 in a row. They give it their all every night. But on Saturday, you know, and let's be frank, it helped that Anthony Edwards was not part of the equation for Minnesota, because they played Minnesota competitive the last game against the Timberwolves at home. But then Anthony, you know, Edwards turned around and had 20 of his 41 points in the fourth quarter. But, you know, plays we're highlighting in the pregame, you know, Bilal Coulibaly had chased down LeBron-like dunk. Rashawn Holmes looked like he was going to dislocate his elbow diving for a loose ball to force a jump ball in the fourth quarter, like it was the NBA Finals. So, yeah, you know, these are guys, and this is what we said at the start of the season, whether it's Rashawn Holmes, you know, fighting for their NBA life, let's face it, or whether you're one of the young players who's fighting to get some identity in the NBA. And so that's the way they go at it each and every night. It's tough when you go to the next day and say, wow, that's 16 in a row.
For sure. And it helps that that Malcolm Brogdon was back. And, you know, you had these, I think, longer stretches where you had some of the veterans on the floor and just playing a higher caliber of basketball. What do you think that those moments, because there's still obviously, even in those moments where you maybe have 3 to 4 vets on the floor instead of just one, what do those moments mean to the young guys to kind of be a part of a more experienced ecosystem in this season of development?
No, you hit the nail on the head with Malcolm Brogdon. He had missed 14 games, and, you know, no coincidence that, you know, 14 of those games, you know, there were losses. So, like, you have a Jordan Poole on the floor, that's one thing, but then you don't have an experienced a backup. So, you know, that's why, you know, Jared Butler has been effective and been a spark at times, but he's still a young player. So Malcolm Brogdon just brings another level that, you know, Glenn Consor explains probably better than I do because he was a former point guard. It's a certain organization and calmness. And when I say organization, it just, it's not even, you know, it's not that he's shouting instructions, you go there, because it's a 24-second clock. But there's just something about, we noticed it Saturday, you know, it's a team that is more organized on offense when it gets stuck in a half-court situation. I shouldn't say stuck, but when it's in a half-court situation. And as a result of that, then it can play better defense. In other words, if you're chaotic and scrambled on offense, chances are it's going to lead to bad defense. So it actually impacts both ends of the floor.
Dave Johnson with us here on the Hoffman Show. Wizards and Hornets tonight. Dave, real quick before we let you go, obviously the news of the weekend in the NBA. I assume that you're not going to Joe Mazzulla me here and be like, I don't care about the trades. Don't ask me about them. But the big trade that goes down Saturday night between the Lakers and the Mavericks with Luka Doncic. I'm curious how you found out, because, I mean, clearly the Wizards breaking the losing streak. That was going to be the biggest story of the night in the league, and it wasn't, because this trade happened. So where were you guys as a team, slash where were you when you found out, and what was your reaction?
Well, it's interesting because of the time change. You know, we were in Minnesota, and I just went down to grab my patented post-game Caesar salad with salmon, and all of a sudden I see it on social media, and it's one of those things where you think, well, wait a minute, am I reading this right? Is this, yeah, because you see all kinds of, you know, proposals, even when it's not on social media, you say so-and-so is speculating or talking, and then it's one of those things. Everybody was doing a double take and trying to. Am I reading this right? Because when I've said this before to you, that often trades that happen are the ones we don't hear about because they're the ones that are not speculated by agents or for various reasons. But I didn't mean it to this extreme. I don't think, you know, anybody obviously saw this coming. I mean, yeah, you know, the fact that Dallas gets away from the Supermax situation, but yet, you know, Dallas has got lots of money. So it just came out of the blue. We were just in Dallas, as you know, a week ago. In fact, we were in Dallas, and there was not one murmur about the Luka Doncic era is over with Dallas. So to say everyone was floored would be an understatement.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, I think my favorite piece of reporting in terms of the level of secrecy here that's come out, Dave, was Danny Ainge and the Utah Jazz, who were the third team in this deal, did not know that part of the deal they were in was Anthony Davis for Luka Doncic. That's how secretive it was until like an hour before it went down. It's just like, yeah, we're doing this trade. Here's what you would get, and there's some picks involved. Is this good for you? And they're like, yeah, sure. Just, you know, we'll let us know when you're ready to call it in. And then all of a sudden, bang, Danny Ainge finds out, hey, former Celtic great Danny Ainge, you're a part of trading Luka Doncic to the Lakers.
Right. Yeah. Well, and if I understood it correctly, Jason Kidd, the coach of the Celtics, the coach of the Mavericks, didn't even
Correct.
Know about it.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
I mean, talk about keeping it hush-hush. I mean, you know, that's not something where you say the GM says, well, I just sent some guy to the G League or whatever. I mean, I just changed the franchise, and, you know, apparently it triggered protests in Dallas and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, it's earth-shattering, and, well, as we know, when it's earth-shattering, it somehow usually involves the Lakers.
That has been the history. It was, I think, like 11 years or something to the day of the Pau Gasol trade, which is another fun bit of history as well. Of course, we'll keep an eye on everything going on with the Wizards this week. I'm sure Will Dawkins is fielding a zillion phone calls, and so if something happens, we'll be talking about it with Dave. In the meantime, we get to just listen to the sweet, dulcet tones of Dave Johnson calling basketball. Wizards and Hornets tonight here on the Team 980 pregame, less than an hour from right now at 6:45. Dave, have a great call, and we will talk to you later in the week, my friend. Thank you as always.
Well, I'm trying to be sweet and dulcet tonight. Thank you.
That is Dave Johnson, the legendary play-by-play man of the Washington Wizards, here on your home for Wizards basketball, the Team 980. Big day for the Commanders today with Josh Harris stepping to the podium. A year-end press conference from the owner. Yes. Oh, what a fun thing that actually happened that hasn't happened for 30 years. Josh Harris, you'll hear the most important things that he had to say. Yeah, we're busting it out. It's a pick six at six on a Monday. The top Commanders storylines of the day next on the Hoffman Show.